Welcome, gentle listeners, to the Daily Nightly, a Jane Austen journey, where we'll be reading the collected works of Austen and exploring her influence in pop culture. We are your humble servants. I'm Annie A.K.
And I am Jessie.
And it is 2020. Happy New Year, Jessie.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Annie. Are you ready? Are we ready to start a new book, a new chapter in our lives?
I honestly can't think of a better way to start 2020. With some Austen and a new book.
Today we're talking about chapters 1 through 5 of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. We made it.
We have. So Sense and Sensibility was her first book, and now we get to just see how she evolves in from one book to another, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to comparing and contrasting and going back and picking out things that kind of mirror each other or show that she's maybe grown as a writer. I'm really looking forward to this one. And I think both of us have a lot more familiarity with this book than we did Sense and Sensibility.
Definitely. I think this is probably the first one people think of when they think of Jane Austen. But before we get to that,
yes,
since we took a break off, I assume you caught up on some things, some books, some TV, some movies. What kind of stuff?
Yeah, you know, in terms of reading, I was actually in a little bit of a reading slump at the end of the year, which I think is important to talk about because a lot of people listening might get the sense that we're just like reading machines over here, which isn't really realistic. I mean, we do both read a lot, but towards the end of the year, things got really busy. I hit my Goodreads goal and I sort of slacked off a little bit. And there wasn't anything that caught my attention. You know, I had gone a full year without a book sort of making me lose interest. And I had a library book come out and it wasn't that it wasn't a good book. I just like wasn't super interested in it. And there was always something else going on. And eventually I just returned the book to the library and I picked up a book that would help me get back on the reading horse, if you will. And that book for me was called American Royals. It's based on the conceit that George Washington decided to let them make him king at the end of the Revolutionary War, and that America's been governed by a monarchy ever since, which I think is the case because it's very unclear. Like, the book is not super concerned about the logistics of this world because they talk about a Congress, but there's no mention of, like, a president or prime minister, so it's like, I don't understand. Anyway. That's neither here nor there because the book isn't really concerned about that. It's mostly concerned about the romantic lives of the royal children. And there's a lot there that's super fun and juicy. Ultimately, the characters did sort of frustrate me and it ended on what I think is kind of a silly cliffhanger for how long of a book it was. Like, nothing really happened. But it was fun and really got me back into reading, which is what I wanted it to do. In terms of other media, there were so many television shows that dropped at the end of the year, like yes. The Expanse, The Crown, The Marvelous Miss Maisel, and I watched them all. But in terms of movies, the thing that maybe I like the most or is the most relevant to our podcast is the Little Women movie, which I know you saw too.
Yes.
And I'm glad I reread the book before I saw it because it made me appreciate a lot of like the little things that were included. And I loved the movie. It didn't really change the way I felt about the book. Laurie and Joe Forever, I'm sorry. What sort of struck me the most was the relationship between the sisters. And I know Jane would appreciate that. So, yeah, so lots of good media at the end of the year. Maybe not as many books as I would have liked, but it's a fresh start, new goals, and I'm looking forward to reading a lot this year.
There was so much stuff that came out at the end of last year. Like you, I got into The Expanse, which I'm still kind of digesting and may rewatch before I have any real solid opinions other than, wow, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Little Women, still haven't read the book, but the movie, I just genuinely loved. It's one of my favorites of 2019. It just had that, like you said, it's the sisterly relationship. It was just so prevalent throughout the entire thing that I felt like I wanted to cry the whole time because it was so sweet and wonderful and made me wish I had a sister.
Oh, Annie. I know. We can be sisters.
You are my sister.
I know. My sister listens to the podcast, so yeah.
I mean, she can come too. I'm not erasing her. And I know we both got a little too into The Witcher.
Oh, The Witcher. I can't even explain why I like that show. I just do. It's just so delightful.
I saw someone describe it as both simultaneously the best and worst TV of 2019, and I can't think of a better description.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really appropriate because it's so fun to watch, but when you describe it to people, you like sound like a crazy person.
Yeah, and you're like, well, there's some flaws, and you start listing them, and then you realize you're still listing them.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, you know, and this, there's lots of boobs and not
so many boobs. Yeah. And so little Henry Cavill taking his shirt off.
Or his, I mean, can I say it? His butt? Like, can yeah, we just can, we can talk about his butt.
Yeah. It's right there. Why would you hide that from us?
I know. We should, like, write a letter. Like, to those who are, to whom it is to be concerned or whatever.
Yeah, and I've heard from a lot of people who played the games and who read the books, and they said it was a pretty good adaptation. I have one friend who's Polish, and she did... One was slightly annoyed they didn't film it in Poland.
Yeah, I know. I know that a lot of East, like the Polish, yeah, because it's interesting because the background actors are so clearly sort of Eastern European looking, but the mm-hmm. the people they cast as for the main roles are like very very not. Mm-hmm. But it's like a fantasy world, right? I mean, it doesn't actually take place in like my husband loves the show and he goes Nilfgaard is Germany. I was like, but it's not Germany. Like, there's magic.
It's the Grimm fairy tales Germany.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. I don't know. Do we want to talk about Star Wars, or is this we've seen the Star War?
Yeah, I maybe liked it more than you, Annie. I don't know, but yeah, we don't. Need
no,
to
I don't think
it.
We talked about it that much. I enjoyed it in the moment, and I have some qualms. That
yeah, I have no. I wanted to enjoy it. I did. Discourse. I don't know.
It was a Star War with it some was, very yeah. talented people in it.
Yes, very talented.
Last time we talked, I said I was going to read a book called A Thousand Fires by Shannon Price. It was kind of an Iliad meets The Outsiders, which it actually really was. That was a very apt description, which also meant that I kind of knew how it was going to end. While the writing didn't super grip me, it wasn't something that I felt like resonated with me in particular. I had a few problems with like the pacing or something was off, but I enjoyed the story enough that I kept reading to the end. It was a fairly quick read for me. It was clearly written by someone who knew San Francisco super well. Geographically, it seemed sound. And I enjoy the characters for the most part. Some of them I wish I had more insight into them other than a little more surface exploration, but... Overall, fun book, quick read. And I just bought one that I probably won't start for a couple of days called Love Boat Taipei by Abigail Hing-Wen. And it's about a girl who's from Ohio, like me, who is sent to Taiwan for the summer to study Mandarin by her parents. She's got like, she's kind of an underachiever in like Asian American standards. So she goes to where all these other like overachieving kids are. And it turns out that like, actually it's kind of just, oh, hold on. Let me just read the description. Unbeknownst to her parents, however, the program is actually an infamous teen meat market nicknamed Love Boat, where the kids are more into clubbing than calligraphy and drinking snake blood sake than touring sacred shrines. So there's like hookups and there's people with secrets and it sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh no, it sounds really good. Into it. It sounds like we have a lot of good reading to get into this year.
Absolutely. So, Jane.
Yes.
Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice.
What would you say were your first, what would you say is your first exposure to this story?
Yeah, I mean, I think we touched on it a little bit when we went into our first exposure to Jane Austen in general, because Pride and Prejudice was the first book of Austen's that I read. Mm-hmm. I think I said in our show notes that I read the book before I'd seen the adaptions of it, which is mostly true because I had seen Bridget Jones's Diary, I think maybe before I'd read Pride and Prejudice without mm-hmm. knowing that it was slightly based on it, which is kind of fun because then you get to revisit it later and see all the connections. But I'm glad this is the first Austen I read and became familiar with because it really hooked me. I mean, I think we'll discover this as we go along, but it's just really engrossing and really emblematic of the characters and the relationships and the complexity and the romance that Jane really brings to the table and why everybody loves her as an mm-hmm. author. So I think that's why everybody reveres it so much and it's maybe the first thing that you think about when you think of Jane Austen.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like later in her career, Jane's writing tends to take a life of its own more, and in her earlier stuff you see her take more from her own life and things that are a lot more personal to her. So I think Pride and Prejudice is in that sweet spot where She's taking a few more creative, a little more creative license into her stories and character, but you still get a firm idea of her as a person and like her life and her environment that she grew up in. Or at least that's the impression I get. I get the impression that this is very personal for her, but she's still having a lot more fun and feeling more confident as a writer.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah, and you know, kind of like when I first encountered her, it was either Bridget Jones' Diary or the 2005 Joe Wright film. They kind of came into my life around the same time. And I think for the in the 2005 movie, you have all the sisters, and they really clearly built up this interaction between all of the actresses who are playing them, and it comes across so warm and friendly and crazy, and I love it. So that actually appeals to me more than Bridget Jones' Diary, because I don't know, it just has so much more warmth. Much more warmth. And Bridget Jones is a fantastic movie. It's hilarious. It gets me every single time. But I'm really looking forward to seeing the sisters interact again. It would have been nice to have a sister that I was close to growing up. Also, I think kind of not long after was in the heyday of video bloggers on YouTube. So you had the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which was a great modern day series adaptation, which I definitely own on DVD. So it's just a great story. You haven't? Oh, I'm going to have to find a way for you to see it, because it just brings me a lot of joy. It's great. It's perfect. The Bing Lee character, his name is Bing, last name Lee. He's an Asian American guy. He's very cute. I thought that was hysterical. I was like, that's where they went with that.
Yeah. Before we kind of go into it, I do want to address really quickly, what was nice about when we read Sense and Sensibility was neither of us had a ton of familiarity about it. Mm-hmm. So I think we were able to go into it a little bit more fresh than we are with Pride and Prejudice.
Yes.
Like, I think, you know, if we had both been pretty familiar with Sense and Sensibility beforehand, we might have had a different view of Willoughby going in, you know, because we didn't know if we should like him or not. Meanwhile, I think we're going to meet characters in this book that both of us are going to know whether or not we should trust them and what relationships to root for, in a way that if you went in fresh, you might not. So I'm going to try my best, and I think we both are, to come at this, you know, without spoiling anything and come in it fresh. But I think it will be a little bit hard not to have those biases like slip in. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, but
when was the last time you read the book?
It's a good question. I honestly don't remember. I want to say like a year or two ago. The thing is, I know it so well. Like,
yeah,
I wrote my like English, my AP English essay on it, and I have so much of it just memorized. And I watch the adaptions all the time, so I just have it so clearly in my brain. But there are things that even in the first five chapters that we read where I kind of went, I didn't remember this, whereas other stuff I remember verbatim.
There's something nice to being kind of like having a goldfish memory when it comes to books sometimes. So everything's going to be kind of nice and fresh for me. So even if it's something that I've encountered in the adaptations that I've seen a lot, hopefully it'll be just like you said, we'll be able to approach it just up to where we have reached in the reading.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, though.
Me too. Yes. So anyway,
would you like to tell us what we read up on in the first five chapters?
I'll do my best, everybody. Okay. A wealthy young gentleman has come to Netherfield Park, Annie. This is of great news to everyone in the town of Longbourn, especially in the Bennett household, which houses five unmarried daughters. Mrs. Bennett, a fussy gossip, sees Bingley's arrival as an opportunity for one of her daughters to obtain a wealthy spouse, and therefore insists that her husband call on the new arrival, a Mr. Charles Bingley, immediately. Mr. Bennett torments his family by pretending to have no interest in doing so, but eventually meets with Mr. Bingley without his family's knowing. When he reveals to his wife and daughters that he's made the new neighbor's acquaintance, they are overjoyed and excited. Eager to learn more, Mrs. Bennett and the girls question Mr. Bennett incessantly. A few days later, Mr. Bingley returns to visit, although to his disappointment, he does not meet Mr. Bennett's pretty daughters. The Bennets invite him to dinner shortly afterward, but he's called away to London. Soon, however, he returns to Netherfield Park with his two sisters, his brother-in-law, and a friend named Darcy. Mr. Bingley and his guests go to a ball in their nearby town of Meryton. The Bennet sisters also attend the ball with their mother. The eldest, Jane, dances twice with Bingley. Within Elizabeth's hearing, Bingley exclaims to Darcy that Jane is the most beautiful creature he has ever beheld. Bingley suggests that Darcy dance with Elizabeth, but Darcy refuses, saying, "She's tolerable, but not handsome enough to tempt me." He proceeds to declare that he has no interest in women who are slighted by other men. Elizabeth takes immediate and understandable dislike to Darcy, as well as us the reader, because of his comments and refusal to dance with anyone not rich and well-bred. The neighborhood takes a similar dislike, but declares Bingley to be quite amiable. At the end of the evening, the Bennet sisters return to their house, where Mrs. Bennet regales her husband with stories from the evening until he insists that she be silent. Upstairs, Jane relates to Elizabeth her surprise that Bingley danced with her twice, and Elizabeth replies that Jane is unaware of her own beauty. Both girls agree that Bingley's sisters are not well-mannered, but whereas Jane insists they're charming in close conversation, Elizabeth continues to harbor a dislike for them. The narrator then provides the reader with Bingley's background. He inherited 100,000 pounds from his father, but for now, in spite of his sister's complaints, he lives as a tenant. His friendship with Darcy is steady despite the contrast of characters. Bingley is cheerful and sociable and had an excellent time. Darcy, however, is much less tactful, finds the people dull, and even criticizes Jane for smiling too much. Bingley's sisters, on the other hand, find Jane to be a sweet girl, and Bingley feels secure in his good opinion of her. The Bennet's neighbors are Sir William Lucas, his wife, and their children. The eldest of these children, Charlotte, is Elizabeth's close friend. The morning after the ball, the women of the families discuss the evening. They decide that while Bingley danced with Charlotte first, he considered Jane to be the prettiest of the local girls. The discussion turns to Darcy, and Elizabeth states that she will never dance with him. And everyone agrees that Darcy, despite his family and fortune, is too proud to be likable.
And who can blame any of them?
Oh gosh, he's so horrible in this chapter, Darcy is.
He's quite unlikable. Yeah. I kind of like that for as much as all of the first five chapters were like, so marrying a rich guy, right? We're going to try to marry a rich guy. We're going to try to marry a rich guy. And then like the richest guy comes in and they're like, ew, he's as a person, like not for really all the money point. Netherfield.
That's a really good point. No, it is like the first sentence is just iconic, right? I mean, we even like based our podcast description on it. It's a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife.
It's such a perfect line.
Oh, it's the perfect line. And that kind of means the opposite is true, right? Like that a woman is in want of, a single woman must be in want of a husband, especially a rich one.
I really appreciated though, like I feel like I've underappreciated the line that follows though, or the paragraph after that says, however little known the feelings or views of such a man may be on his first evening, this truth is so well fixed in the minds of the surrounding families that he is considered the rightful property of someone or other of their daughters. I went, oh, it's funny because that's true too. That's basically the rest of the book.
Oh yeah, and you see like Bingley in a way that you can't see in the adaptions. Like Bingley comes to the Bennet house and like is sad that he like can't see all the pretty girls,
which is so nice because you never get his perspective from the in the adaptations. He just shows up and he's just like, hey guys. It's like, no, he was looking for women too.
Yeah, and his sister's like running his household, which, you know, he probably wants his wife to do that. And it is funny that the first chapter is just entirely a dialogue conversation between Miss and Mrs. and Mr. Bennet. And you don't really get a description of them until later, and so you sort of have to fix their character based on this conversation.
And it's hilarious. They're so funny, and you can see there's a lot of affection there, but mostly it's just Mr. Bennet driving his wife crazy.
I know. I feel like Mrs. Bennet is always described, and we're going to get into this, I'm absolutely sure, is this like silly, frivolous gossip of a woman, but she just wants her daughters married. You know, she's just trying to get them married. And, you know, Mr. Bennet's making it difficult for her.
The business of her life was to get her daughters married. The solace was visiting and news. And it sounds superficial and shallow, but what else is she going to do? She can't. She has four.
Yeah.
Five daughters that she needs taken care of at some point. She has to get them married.
And then you also sort of get like an introduction to her daughters because she says, oh, this will be great for our daughters. And Mr. Bennet's like, yeah, hopefully he likes Lizzie. And she's like, Lizzie's not better than the other girls. Like, she's not half as pretty as Jane and not half as so good humored as Lydia, but you're always giving her preference. And so it's funny because you, like, you immediately understand that Lizzie is Mr. Bennett's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And that Jane and Lydia are clearly Mrs. Bennett's favorite because you don't even hear Kitty or Mary's name mentioned in the first chapter.
Those poor two girls. I know, at first you think, oh, three sisters. But for particular social reasons, Miss Bennett is going to slightly favor the ones who are more likely to appeal to more traditional characteristics that are wanted in a woman, like being good-natured and being pretty. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Bennett's just like, I like the one who's like me.
I mean, you definitely get a sense of everything, even because really the first few chapters are only like 20 pages or something. The amount of information that Jane gives you about the characters and the short amount of time is really just very impressive.
It is, especially considering it's mostly dialogue. I mean, you still get a few blocks of exposition and stuff in like chapters 4 and 5. But, you know, when we compare it to Sense and Sensibility, which was just so much information, big old blocks of text. And, you know, it was funny and entertaining to read, but it could also occasionally be a little hard to get through sometimes. And here mm-hmm. you learn so much about their personalities and who they are as people just by peeking into their conversation.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, you know, we know that the main sisters we're going to focus on are Lizzie and Jane, with Elizabeth being kind of the main character. But you don't really even get a sense of her until, like, the third chapter. And even then, it's like... Mm-hmm. very small.
Certainly. Which is kind of, it is kind of a funny way of approaching it, but like you get, it's like she's setting the environment and the general tone before she says, and this is your hero.
And that's really different than in Sense and Sensibility, where I feel like we were sort of thrown into this world very quickly and introduced to Eleanor and Marianne immediately and told basically like, this is who they are as people, these are the characters that we're going to follow. Eleanor is maybe more an author surrogate, but like, this is who you're going to be following throughout mm-hmm. the book. Whereas here it's like, no, we got to get everybody married, this is what we got to do, oh yeah, and like,
and go.
Lizzie's the smart one. Yeah.
No, because we talked about how Sense and Sensibility was originally written in that epistolatory format, and you can tell, even if it was just sort of switched around to fit the more novel, more typical novel narrative voice. But this comes right in, much more dialogue heavy, much more more organic. It flows a lot better. It knows what it is very early on, and it's so gripping immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited to read this, actually.
It's really nice, like, actually having the perspective here, because I think when I read originally, not only did I sort of think, like, oh, Mrs. Bennett is, like, the silly, frivolous woman who just cares about beauty and getting her daughters married, but I also really liked Mr. Bennett. I was like, he's sarcastic, he's dry, he's funny, like, I like him. But now, like, upon reading, like, he's kind of a dick. Like, he's just, like, he thinks he's playing this, like, very funny joke on his family. But it's, like, not that funny. What is, like, your life so sad that you need to, like, mess around with your family in order to, like, have your small amusements?
Yeah, what is he doing with the rest of his day anyways?
Yeah, like, in the second chapter when he's, like, well, I paid the visit already, so now we gotta see him, like, and everyone's, like, you know, laughing, and he's just like, oh, these silly, ignorant women, like, whatever.
Yeah, and Mrs. Bennett just immediately like, oh, I knew you would do it, blah, 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 I knew everything would be fine, and it's like, it's kind of, it's not, you don't want to give her credit for just being, like, so strong in her convictions or just getting mad immediately, but what position of power does she have to be like, what is wrong with you? She has mm-hmm. no other venue of action other than be like, yes, it's fine now. Okay. Just, I'm going to go with it. Because he's just a troll. This is what happens when you marry a troll.
That is what happens when you marry a troll. Lesson learned. Does this remind you at all of, like, the Palmers relationship in Sense and Sensibility?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, now that you mentioned it, that's exactly the same dynamic.
It's a little bit more developed in some ways. And in some ways, they're even more of a character. And we don't obviously know, like, we know that there's 5 unmarried girls, and we know that they want them all to be married off, but we don't really know the financial situation of mm-hmm. them yet, but you do get the sense that, like, they're not living in the lap of luxury, like, because they need all these daughters to get married, and there's no son, so.
Yeah, she's, Mrs. Banovitz, very desperate.
Yeah, it stands to reason that, like, they need to be married off.
And I don't, and I think quite like Mrs. Dashwood, you do get more affection for her daughters in the book than you do in the adaptations, I think. Mm-hmm. When Mr. Bennett is talking about Lizzie being his favorite and everything, you usually hear the line where Mrs. Bennett's like, "You have no compassion for my poor nerves," but you don't hear beforehand, she says, "Mr. Bennett, how can you abuse your children in such a way?" I love that that's her first thought of, like, why are you putting your girls down just because you have a favorite?
Oh, yeah. And even he says they are all silly and ignorant like other girls, but Lizzie is something more of quickness than her sisters. So it's not even that he's saying, like, Lizzie's so smart or whatever. He's saying that they're all silly and ignorant, and all girls are silly and ignorant, but Lizzie's just, like, a little bit better than that, which is not really the same thing.
No, not at all. It actually just reminded me of Harry in Fleabag, where he's like, "You're not like other girls. You can, you know, keep up."
Yeah, that's, like, not a compliment.
Yeah, let's not put down other girls just to raise some others up. They're all lovely in their own way.
So the main sort of plot really comes in chapter 3 when we go to the ball in Meryton. Mm-hmm. And there we finally get a picture of Bingley, and really he's almost, and his sisters, and then his friend Darcy, who's almost, they're given the most description of anyone we've met in the book so far. And even when you compare it to Sense and Sensibility, like, you get way more description of these two men than you get in that book of anybody. Mm-hmm. And so we're given, just over and over again, we're sort of beaten over the head with their contrasting personalities. And I don't know, I think that's really interesting.
It is really nice. How did they describe Bingley?
Oh, he's quite young, wonderfully handsome, extremely agreeable, and to crown the whole, he meant to be at the next assembly with a large party. Nothing could be more delightful. To be fond of dancing was a certain step towards falling in love.
It's hard for me not to have Simon Woods in my head as they describe him, with that, like, big, bright, open smile he had, just complete pure, just pure. He's just pure.
Yeah, he's described as good-looking and gentlemanlike a lot of times. He's amiable. Mm-hmm. That's, like, immediately what you think about. Pleasant mm-hmm. countenance, easy, unaffected manners. Like, just over and over again, that's what we get of him.
It's so nice and clean. But this being just from our previous experience with Jane with Sense and Sensibility, it's hard to imagine that this is our main guy just because he is so uncomplicatedly wonderful.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. Yeah, you're like, what's the deal with him?
Something has to be wrong, other than the fact he has a sister. He has sisters, one of whom Jane thinks is quite lovely once you get to know her, and that you get the sense Elizabeth is like, sure she is.
Oh, there was some really good quote about the sisters that I absolutely loved. I mean, it might have even been in the fourth. "They were, in fact, very fine ladies, not deficient in good humor when they were pleased, nor in the power of being agreeable when they chose it, but proud and conceited. They were rather handsome, had been educated, blah, blah, and were therefore in every respect entitled to think well of themselves." So they're not really, like, when you compare how they're described to when you read Sense and Sensibility and you hear about the Steele sisters, mm-hmm. you don't get the sense that they're, like, not, you know, silly or ignorant. Like, they're very smart, they're very good looking, and they have every right to be sort of conceited and proud. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, you don't have to be rude.
No, we don't abide by rudeness here. But I think at some point they referred to Jane as, like, a nice girl, basically, which Bingley was just like, that's enough for me. Cool. I'm taking it as permission.
Yeah, no, he takes, like, them being nice about Jane as permission for him to like her. So I think that's kind of our first clue that Bingley's a nice dude, but maybe, yeah. like, he doesn't need his sister's permission to like a girl.
That is actually kind of sweet as the man of the house. They're like, oh, they're okay with her.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, there's different ways of looking at it. I mean, he's kind of, like, doormatted a little bit. Mm-hmm. But he does like Jane, you know, he danced with her twice. So I don't know, we can like him for now at least.
Definitely. And he tries to get his dour, scowly, grumpy friend to dance too.
Oh God. So Darcy, I really want to deconstruct the various ways that Darcy is described, because I think it's important to look at how Jane describes him in narration and mm-hmm. also how other people talk about him. I think that's an important distinction to make here.
Yes. His friend Darcy soon drew the attention of the room by his fine, tall person, handsome features, noble mien, and the report, which was in general circulation within 5 minutes after his entrance, of having 10,000 a year. In my head, I went ding, ding, ding.
Ding, 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 ding. So he's handsome and rich.
And he's rich and he's tall. It's like that meme of like, is he cute or is he tall?
So that's how he's like described as, is he cute or is he tall? Is that, that's sort of how he's looked at relatively objectively. And then you get the gentleman Darcy pronounced him to be a fine figure of a man. The ladies declared he was much handsomer than Mr. Bingley, and he was looked at with great admiration for about half the evening, till his manners gave a disgust which turned the tide of his popularity, for he was discovered to be proud, to be above his company, and above being pleased, and to all his large estate in Derbyshire could then save him from having a most forbidding, disagreeable countenance and being unworthy to be compared with his friend.
Yeah, no fun. No fun at all.
They say he's proud a lot.
They really do. In case you don't know what it's called, the book is called Pride and Prejudice. They're going to remind you of this often.
No, and it, you know, we joked about A Sense and Sensibility, but here there's not, I don't think the word prejudice comes up as much as proud does, but proud comes up a lot.
It really does. He was the proudest, most disagreeable man in the world, and everyone hoped that he would never come here again. Among the most violent against him was Mrs. Bennet, whose dislike of his general behavior was sharpened into particular resentment by his having slighted one of her daughters. So as much as she wants one of her kids, all her kids actually, to be married, and at some point is even like, if one of my daughters can marry Mr. Bingley, and, you know, all the other ones were also equally well married, which is no small ask. She's like, this guy who's twice as rich as Bingley, nah, we're good without him. She's ride or die with those girls.
I mean, good, yeah. I feel like when I think back on the book and the show and the various, like, adaptions, which I know we haven't gotten to yet, but I feel like there is this tension between Mrs. Like, maybe this is real or imagined, but that there's this tension between Mrs. Bennet and Elizabeth, because Elizabeth maybe is more like the father, and Miss Bennet clearly hasn't figured out the father and is sort of just whatever about him. But here she's like, no, like, he, you know, dissed one of my daughters and he's a jerk. And yeah, I like that, ride or die over all her daughters.
On the one hand, I'm like, it is so easy just immediately write someone off going, they're rich, they don't like me, they're obviously just some spoiled, snobbish rich guy. But at the same time, he keeps proving himself to be super rude and doesn't even try to, like, hide his disdain for these lower people.
No, and I think we should talk about the way in which he does diss Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. I like that they introduced that he slighted her ahead of time before actually telling us what happened, because the whole time you're like, was it that bad? What happened? Did I miss it? And then later on you hear it, you're like, oh.
It's bad, right? It's rude. Real bad. Yeah.
It's mean,
yeah.
You are dancing with the only handsome girl in the room, said Mr. Darcy, looking at the eldest Miss Bennet. Oh, she is the most beautiful creature I ever beheld, but there is one of her sisters sitting down just behind you. Oh, so he actually knows that he's right behind her.
Yeah.
Who is very pretty and I dare say very agreeable. Do let me ask my partner to introduce you. Which do you mean? And turning around for a moment at Elizabeth, still catching her eye, he withdrew his own and coldly said, she is tolerable, but not handsome enough to tempt me. I am in no humor at present to give consequence to young ladies who are slighted by other men. You had better return to your partner and enjoy your smiles, for you're wasting your time with me. That is less of a burn and more of just a what the F, dude.
No, it's, I didn't put it in the, it's not a burn. It's just like very mean and very rude. And I really, you know, in an attempt to try to find like a flip side to it, I honestly can't. Like, it's very mean.
No. Like, our burns tend to be like low key, passive aggressive, witty stuff. But this is just, it's so different from all the other burns that we tend to see in Austen's writing, which are kind of sly and wry and like you're in on the joke but not really. This is just
And I think we also get to really see our first view of Elizabeth here, because it says Elizabeth had a lively, playful disposition which delighted in anything ridiculous, and immediately she goes like to talk to her friends like, did you hear this jerk? So we get her reaction to it.
I was going
to
say, I do like that that's the sort of person she is, where she's like, this sucks, my pride is injured, but so let's just have a laugh about it.
Mm-hmm. The original title of the novel was going to be First Impressions, And I think this is the chapter, The Ball, where you really see the first impressions of the two main male-female relationships, right? We have Bingley and Jane, who are just, like, kind of effortless. They meet, they, like, look at each other across the room, they're like, you're pretty, like, we're gonna dance, like, twice tonight. And they're both described as, like, very nice, sweet people, and there's attraction there, like, whatever. And then you see, on the flip side, Darcy being a jerk. He has this, like, superiority complex. He snubs her, and she immediately dislikes him. And I think you're supposed to view it in direct contrast. The two couples are clearly contrasted here, and their first impressions are, like, I think first impressions, like, might not be the best title for this book, because, but it is a little tongue-in-cheek here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're supposed to view these relationships in contrast. There's Jane and Bingley, and there's Darcy and Elizabeth, and when the night ends, Jane and Bingley are this sort of couple that's meant to be together, and Darcy and Elizabeth are like oil and water.
Definitely. I mean, do we think that showing the Mr. and Mrs. Ben at the beginning kind of sets this idea of what a married couple can be, like having their barbed, you know, wit going back and forth, banter and everything, and as opposed to the kind of simple, easy romance and dynamic that you have between, like, Bingley and Jane? Do you think maybe that's kind of setting us up for seeing Elizabeth and Darcy versus the other guys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're told over and over again Darcy's, like, proud and blah, blah, blah. But, like, the other title of the book is Prejudice. So I think first impressions are something that you take into account when you meet someone. And clearly they can have an effect, like Bingley and Jane, a positive effect. Or they can have a negative effect, but maybe you shouldn't let your prejudice blind you to certain things. So I think, you know, and same with Sense and Sensibility, right? Like, this is sort of Jane's calling card, where you view people one way, but you also sort of have to think in the back of your head, like, okay, like, is there another angle here? Is there something else going on? For all we know, right, like, Bingley could end up being some sort of jerk, or, you know, there are lots of things that could happen by the end of the book, but these are the facts that we're left with at the moment. And I think that you're supposed to leave this chapter being like, wow, Bingley and Jane, they're so cute and happy together. Darcy's a jerk. Like, Elizabeth can do a lot better, even if he does have £1 billion a year.
Like, the entire box set of Jane Austen's work can just be labeled misunderstandings.
Yeah. Oh god, and we haven't even gotten to Persuasion yet.
No, goodness no. Then we have Emma and Sandy. We have so much to look forward to.
So we also have, the other sisters finally mentioned. We have Mary and Kitty and Lydia. Mary's happy because she heard herself being mentioned to Miss Bingley as the most accomplished girl in the neighborhood. And Catherine and Lydia had been fortunate enough to never be without partners, which was all they had yet learned to care for at a ball. So that kind of starts shaping the character of these other sisters.
Yes, even though we don't get to see, like, quite a lot of them, you get the sense real early on of what part they play in their family.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, with only just, like, a few lines, really, to talk about.
There's one part where we talk about Mary. They ask Mary of her opinion on something, and it says, Mary wished to say something sensible, but knew not how.
Yeah, while Mary is adjusting.
While Mary is adjusting her ideas, let us return to Mr. Bingley. And I just felt so bad for her.
No, I put that as a burn because I thought it was so mean.
Poor Mary. And Mr. Bennet, I genuinely laughed a lot at the cafe when I read this part. When Kitty is coughing and they're just like, do you have to keep coughing? Which is such a family thing to do where you're like irrationally mad at someone for making noise that they can't control. And Mr. Bennet says, Kitty has no discretion in her coughs, said her father. She times them ill. And I thought, this dad joke right here.
Oh, and then like when they get back from the ball and they're like telling Mr. Bennet about it and he goes, if he had any compassion for me, cried her husband impatiently, he would have not danced half so much. For God's sake, say no more of his partners. Oh, that he had sprained his ankle in the first dance.
I really love that. Mr. Bennett's a complicated character because he does say stuff where you're like, what is wrong with you? Why are you so unhappy? But then he says stuff like that and you're like, that's kind of mean, but also really funny.
And I like how it's never remarked on by the other characters. They're all like, oh, you're just like a curmudgeon, like whatever.
He's just a curmudgeon who didn't have any sons.
Too soon. But it's funny because like after the ball chapter, then we literally get just the debrief Right? Like, how many parties have you mm-hmm. been to? And, like, the best part of the party is, like, coming home with your friends and family and being like, oh, my God, did you see, like, this and this? Like, what was she wearing? Like, what was he wearing? Like, oh, my God, like, the gossip of the night. Like, it's, like, really fun that we get kind of two chapters devoted to just, like, debriefing from the ball.
Yeah, so you get the events mostly, and then the other one, a lot of it you have, like, the analysis and mm-hmm. any like gossip you picked up. Jane and Lizzie are talking about Mr. Bingley and how pleasant he was.
And he's just what a young man ought to be, Annie.
He is, with money. Yeah. What's it? Miss Bingley told me, said Jane, that he never speaks so much. Oh, there. This is him talking about Darcy. Miss Bingley told me that, said Jane, that he never speaks much unless among his intimate acquaintances. With them, he is remarkably agreeable. But by this point in the book, I think we're all like, really, though? Or is everyone just saying that because he's rich?
Yeah, you know, I guess this is our first time where we're supposed to sort of be like, well, Bingley's his friend. He's not going to say anything bad about his friend. And, like, clearly if they get along and they're friends, like, Darcy can't be all that bad. Mm-hmm. And, like, maybe he was shy. I mean, I think introversion gets confused for being rude a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And I am willing to make that, like, I get it. Like, I go to parties and I don't want to dance with random strangers. I don't want to talk to random people. But I think what's still, like, his language that he uses is very rude. Like, he doesn't need to insult Elizabeth in order to be like, hey, Bingley, like, lay off. Like, I just need to be by myself right now. Mm-hmm. So he is rude.
Yeah, there's being, like, blunt or lacking tact, and then there is being rude. Because mm-hmm. there was this one line, it said, Darcy danced only once with Miss Hurst and once with Miss Bingley, declined being introduced to any other lady, and spent the rest of the evening in walking about the room, speaking occasionally to one of his own party, which was a moment where I went, oh, that sounds like me at a party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, that's not rude. Yeah.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
But all the other stuff, not super great.
Yeah. But what's fun about this chapter is the sister relationship between Elizabeth and Jane. Like, I think they're set up here to be the people that we want to hear about the most. Like, they're the mm-hmm. Eleanor and Marianne relationship, right?
Yes.
And they're defined in opposition to each other, just like Bingley and Darcy are, right? Like, Elizabeth says, you know, compliments always take you by surprise and me never. Like, Elizabeth is very aware of their differences, but, like, clearly loves her sister. And Jane obviously loves Elizabeth, and they have this, like, sister conversation. Although Elizabeth says, like, I give you leave to like him. You've liked many a stupider person.
I put three fires emojis next to that line in my notes.
And Jane, like, doesn't even faze her. She's like, whatever.
No, they're fully aware that Jane just tends to think better of people than Elizabeth, who is more cynical, which I tend to relate to.
Yeah, their personalities are very quickly defined in this chapter as they're just sort of discussing the ball. You know, Jane, you know, sees the good in Bingley, even tries to see the good in Darcy, sees the good in the sisters. And Elizabeth is like, like, okay, like, you know, whatever you say.
It is kind of telling that everything we hear from Jane is her talking kindly about someone, even if it's someone we don't really like, whether it's Mr. Darcy, who's the worst of the people that we first meet, and the Miss Bingley, the sister, who we don't really get a sense of other than her being just kind of like there. Mm-hmm. But it is about Mr. Bingley, I think we hear her say the most about. Mm-hmm. Sensible, good-humored, lively, never saw such happy manners, so much ease, with such perfect good breeding, which sounds terribly boring, but it seems to appeal to Jane in a way where you can see the both of them having just being of similar good nature.
Yeah. And then you get the flip side, like there's like a paragraph or something at the end of the chapter where then you get Bingley and Darcy talking about the evening as well. So you get their debrief and you get some more information about them, right? Like, Bingley was by no means deficient, but Darcy was clever. He was at the same time haughty, reserved, and fastidious, and his manners, though well-bred, were not inviting. In that respect, his friend had greatly the advantage. Bingley was sure of being liked wherever he appeared. Darcy was continually giving offense. So they're contrasted against each other, just like Elizabeth and Jane are. So you get the, just mm-hmm. in one chapter, in like a couple of pages really, because it's not a very long chapter, you get this contrast of these people and these friends. But they still like clearly love each other.
Yeah, and you see they're actually paired in a way where they fit each other. They help each other out, or one fills in the void that the other may not possess. I thought it was kind of nice when it said Bingley was endeared to Darcy by the easiness, openness, and ductility of his temper, though no disposition could offer greater contrast through his own. So while Darcy doesn't necessarily want to be a cheerier, happier person, doesn't have it in himself to be that person, the fact that he sees it in Bingley as a quality that he wants around him is nice.
Yes, that's something that is a tick in the Darcy, in favor of Darcy column.
Yeah, it's just like that little toehold of like, maybe you may like him later, but also not really.
Yeah. And then in the next chapter, we're introduced to some more characters, the Lucases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny. I never had seen William Lucas described in this way. I mean, I read the book before, obviously, but I'd always kind of remembered him as this like rosy-cheeked, whatever kind of dude. But he's described as like having been knighted and feeling that distinction a little too strongly and was thinking about the pleasure of his own importance. And he's kind of a snob, but then you meet his daughter, Charlotte, who we're introduced to being best friends with Elizabeth, and you're like, okay, like, I don't know, I had never pictured him as a snob. I had never remembered that being part of his description before, so that was sort of interesting.
I got the impression he's kind of like a big fish in a small pond,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't do well as the small fish in the big pond.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, it is kind of interesting that he's got this daughter that Lizzie thinks so highly of and has as such a good a friend. Mrs. Bennet, though, clearly, I don't know if she just sees Charlotte as competition, being a single 27-year-old woman,
mm-hmm.
because she just kind of talks about her behind her back a little bit. Not necessarily in any malicious kind of way, just kind of like, I was vexed to see Mr. Bingley dance with her, but it's okay.
There's a candidate for the burn that I put down.
Uh-huh.
Lady Lucas was a very good kind of woman, not too clever to be a valuable neighbor to Mrs. Bennet.
And then when Charlotte comes over, Mrs. Bennet is like, you began the evening well, said Mrs. Bennet, with a civil self-command to Miss Lucas. You were Mr. Bingley's first choice. Yeah. It was just kind of like a whole, so, it was just like a little touch of the Regina George.
Oh, yeah, there was definitely some.
Just kind of pointing it out.
Yeah.
But Charlotte's kind of no nonsense, because immediately Charlotte's just like, oh, well, I mean, I suppose that, yeah, it was great. You know, we danced. It was very nice. But clearly he was into Jane. He danced with her twice.
No, I like Charlotte's very no nonsense. Although, like, I can't tell if this is sarcastic or like actually sort of like a real emotion when she turns to Elizabeth and says, Mr. Darcy is not so well worth listening to as his friend, is he? Poor Eliza, to be only just tolerable.
That is a deep, deep, dark dig.
Yeah.
I think being tolerable, like, don't even hate her or like her. She's just there. That does seem like something that Lizzie would bristle at. Just being a mediocre reaction. One character that we don't necessarily meet, but we hear mentioned like twice, though, that kind of amused me was Mrs. Long.
Oh, yeah.
Because when they're talking about Darcy and about how rude he is, someone said, oh, I think it's Miss Bennet who says this. I beg you not, you would not put it in Lizzie's head to be vexed by his ill treatment, for he is such a disagreeable man that it would be quite a misfortune to be liked by him. Mrs. Long told me last night that he sat close to her for half an hour without once opening his lips. So there's that part. And then there was another part, which I thought was hilarious, that Mrs. Bennet said before they, in chapter two, before they actually meet Mr. Bingley, because one of the daughters said that Mrs. Long said she would introduce Bingley to the daughters Mr. Bennet was refusing to, and Mrs. Bennet does not trust her. She goes, I do not believe Mrs. Long will do any such thing. She has two nieces of her own. She is a selfish, hypocritical woman, and I have no opinion of her. It's like, sure you do. Sure you do, lady. So I'm kind of interested. Mrs. Long just seems like the go-to for the hot goss.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing I did want to mention. This is the second book so far where Austen has mentioned the importance of dancing in love.
Oh, yeah.
She says, to be fond of dancing was a certain step towards falling in love, and very lively hopes of Mr. Bingley's heart were entertained.
I love that, being, you know, loving dancing.
And of course, Mr. Darcy refused to dance.
And then you have at the very end of the chapter, right? Another time Lizzie said her mother, I would not dance with him if I were you. I believe, ma'am, she says, I may safely promise you never to dance with him. I feel like I wrote next to that, like, foreshadowing, like, famous last words. Mm-hmm. Like, you know you're going to dance with him, girl. Like, we all can tell you're going to dance with him.
I mean, one step in the right direction would be Mr. Darcy starting to dance. Who doesn't love a man who can dance?
That's true.
Which Mr. Bingley did all night.
With every girl in the room, but Jane twice, don't forget.
Twice.
I also love this line, I could easily forgive his pride if he had not mortified mine. And I think it's really honest of Elizabeth. Like, that doesn't seem like some funny, like, witty thing for her to say. You know, this is this proud guy, like, whatever, he's not super likable. But he didn't need to just insult her like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I...
She's very aware.
Yeah.
I think where we had Eleanor, who was the more the Lizzie Bennet sort of personality, she's a lot more aware of her own personal flaws and isn't as internal with her feelings. She's very open with sharing them.
No, that's a really good point. Like, I think if we are going to compare them to Sense and Sensibility, maybe Jane would even be the Eleanor type. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't really think it's like a one-to-one comparison. But I do like that the sister bond is still there and is something that's like clearly on Jane's mind and prevalent in her writing. But I also get the sense that Elizabeth may be more like Jane than Eleanor.
Yes. Well, here's the confusing part. The oldest sister is named Jane. And she is the most perfect woman in all the world.
Can you imagine, like, just writing all your books, like, I'm going to name all these characters, like, my name.
Yes. It's like, Lizzie is very hard-headed and hard to deal with sometimes. Her sister is the perfect person that everyone loves and think is super beautiful. I'm going to name her after me.
There's, like, four women's names, like, in all of Regency England, and, like, so you just have to name a character Jane.
Yeah. I did also like this part here, since we don't give so much time to Mary. She says, pride, observe Mary, who piqued herself upon the solidity of her reflections, is a very common failing, I believe. By all that I have ever read, I am convinced that it is very common indeed. I think it's really cute that she's just like, oh, I have something to say here. And it's a very good observation. I think it's very important. A person may be proud without being vain. Pride relates more to our opinion of ourselves, vanity to what we would have others think of us. It's very good once Mary says something. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was very sweet when she was like, by all that I have ever read, because she's like, I read about it in a book. This is how people are, as opposed to someone with experience, because she's just so like internal and much more introverted than all the other characters. It's very cute.
No, I, you know, it is interesting to know, like, what information we get about these characters and what we don't know yet and who isn't super well-rounded. Like, we know Kitty coughs, but what else do we know?
She's good. What is she? She's good-natured or fun? Mm-hmm. Light? You know. Compared to Sense and Sensibility already, we've got a book where things are definitely more of the show and not tell. I love that we get so many different perspectives on all the different characters than we would have otherwise. I think they're less one-sided as they may have been in Sense and Sensibility. She paints like a much richer, fuller picture, I think, with a lot less and a lot more effectively, I think. What about you?
Yeah, no, I agree. I can sort of easily see why maybe people in the more modern times reading these two books might gravitate more to Pride and Prejudice, because Elizabeth is maybe more of like the type that a more modern reader would gravitate towards. Because even though Eleanor is maybe the more calm and rational one, she's so internal that when you get to see this character that is mocked so openly and can make a joke about it and is described as like clever and things like that, then it's maybe a little bit more easier to relate to that type of person.
Yeah, Lizzie is almost more the person that you wish that you were.
Yeah.
Even flaws and all.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see, like, why this character has resonated with people over so many years, why more story, like, already you can see why so many more stories have come from her as a story archetype.
And why maybe it's a little bit more easy to make a modern version of Pride and Prejudice than it is Sense and Sensibility. Mm-hmm. Like, you can even tell within the first few chapters.
It does sound a lot more like a modern romance novel with the quippiness.
Yeah, and even taking out the idea that you'd need to get, like, married right away, I mean, that is still something that we deal with in this modern time, like the pressure to find someone, to be with someone, and really get married. I mean, regardless of, you know, 100,000 pounds a year, blah, 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 like, that's still a pressure that women feel and men feel in a more modern time. So I think within even these few chapters, you can easily begin to see why this is maybe the book that is the first thing that you think about.
Mm-hmm. Although I was watching QI last night, and they were asking what the average age of marriage was in like the 1700s. I think it was the 1700s. And they said it for women, it was still in like the mid 20s, not as young as you'd expect. A lot of our impressions that we get about women getting married when they were like 14 and 16 tend to be of stories based on aristocracy. And you had royals who were married from like birth, but they didn't actually like live and reign together until, you know, they were 18 or whatever. But I think they still make a point to mention that Charlotte is, what is she, 28? 27.
Yeah, Charlotte's 27 and like an old maid, kind of. But it's also, I think, less of like a pressure to just get out of the house. And like the way that money's talked about here, like the money is clearly a factor. Mm-hmm. They only have daughters. Like, we know how important it is to have sons in this age. So it's important to get them married off into husbands that have some money. Maybe less so they can just be married, and more so they don't have to worry about money. Mm-hmm. Like, I think money is the factor here, not even like the patriarchy, really. Other than, I mean, you can't really remove it from it because only the men have money, blah blah, but like, yeah. You know what I mean?
And all the women are really good for is getting married, being married off, because otherwise they're a burden.
I mean, yeah, like we saw that in Sense and Sensibility. Like, what, you know, what can these women even do? Like, all they can do is get married. And same with the women that we meet here, even if Elizabeth is very smart and clever, and
even though they're the only heirs to Mr. Bennet's estate, I guess you could call it, we saw in Sense and Sensibility that still doesn't hold for anything, because their half-brother got everything. And when, you know, Fanny Dashwood got married, everything that was hers became her husband's.
Yeah. Stupid.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait, I was just watching something about this. I was like, oh, it was Little Women when they were talking about how marriage was a financial transaction. Oh, what a good movie. So we have so much to look ahead to.
Yeah, wait, we haven't done our burn stuff.
Oh, right.
Do you have your favorite? I mean, we've talked a little bit about them.
We've mentioned a few. Oh, I think I mentioned the Mrs. Long one twice. When Mrs. Benno said she is a selfish, hypocritical woman and I have no opinion of her, because not having an opinion on someone is like the worst possible thing, but also she super strongly has an opinion on her. I think we mentioned the other one where Elizabeth tells Jane, well, he certainly is very agreeable and I give you leave to like him. You have liked many a stupider person. And yeah, I think we actually covered them all just because they were so good. We couldn't not mention them. My other one was when Mr. Bennet was just like, oh my God, if Bingley had any consideration for my nerves, he would have stopped dancing with people so I wouldn't keep hearing about them.
That's also a good one.
All right, what do you got?
So I think my favorite actually might be in, my favorite two might be in the first chapter, when Mr. and Mrs. Bennet are talking about Mr. Bingley arriving. Mr. Bennet says, you're as handsome as any of them. Mr. Bingley might like you the best of the party.
I actually thought that was really sweet because, you know, you've heard partner.
You thought it was sweet?
I thought it was because, you know, like sometimes husbands or partners in general are kind of joking, but they're always also just looking for, even if they're not being serious, looking for a chance to be like, oh, but you're the prettiest, baby. It's just you.
See, I totally read that as like, like, you're just as pretty, like fully knowing that like she's not. And I'm like,
I wanted to believe that it was like just still her dropping in like, no, they actually do like each other, even though they drive each other crazy.
Mm-hmm. And then I also liked, I have a high respect for your nerves. They're my old friends. I've heard you mention them with consideration these 20 years at least.
I do love that one. That one's funny.
Mm-hmm. I think those are my favorite. Yeah, I mean, other than the ones that we already sort of talked about, I think those were sort of my favorite. A lot of the burns, I think we mentioned, are sort of overt and not as, like, tongue-in-cheek as maybe in Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, there was one thing that Mrs. Bennet said. It was when Mrs. Bennet was explaining to Mr. Bennet just how much she disliked him. Mrs. Bennet was saying, but I can assure you, she added, that Lizzie does not lose much by not suiting his fancy, for he is a most disagreeable, horrid man, not at all worth pleasing, so high and conceited that there was no enduring him. He walked here, he walked there, fancying himself so very great, not handsome enough to dance with. I wish you had been there, my dear, to have given him one of your set-downs. I quite detest the man. I love that she's just acknowledging that her husband is just so dry and so sarcastic and full of burns that she just wishes he was there to just, like, set fire to him.
I miss that. I love that.
It's in chapter 3.
Oh, I like that a lot. That's really cool.
It's kind of sweet. I love, for as much as they drive each other crazy, I think they enjoy each other a lot.
Yeah, no, that makes me really happy. So yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about a lot mm-hmm. in just of like 20 pages of text, but is there anything else that you want to talk about? Or
I think we got all we could out of the first five chapters.
I know, I feel like we really squeezed a lot out of there.
For as short as they are, they're not, I don't feel they're as dense in Sense and Sensibility were, but we mm-hmm. still get so much out of them.
Well, when we first started reading Sense and Sensibility, it was a lot of like, there's like eight different Dashwoods, and like, this is like, there was a little bit more math involved, I feel like, you know, being analytical about it, whereas this is like a little bit more straightforward. So you kind of like thrown in right away.
We have a sense of the world they live in already, so I don't think we didn't need that explained to us anymore. We didn't need all the confusion of who and was related to who and how and who's inheriting what and all the lying.
The lying.
There's still time. There's still 50 chapters left.
There's so 56. Much more time for lying. But yeah, so next time we'll be talking about chapters 6 through 10.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll get a little more about the sisters and maybe get to know Mr. Bingley a little better.
And I wouldn't say no to not seeing Mr. Darcy again, or to see Mr. Darcy again, but we'll see.
We shall see. I'm really interested in getting to know Lizzie a lot better, other than her being slighted. She has all these other relationships in her life. She has her sister, she has her parents, she has Miss Lucas and her friends. So we'll see what she gets up to.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Why is she the favorite?
Yeah, next time.
All right, anything
on the Daily Nugget.
What, anything in particular you're looking forward to?
No, I think I agree. I want to talk, I want to learn more about Elizabeth. I want to see more of her and Darcy verbally sparring. I want to learn more about the other sisters, and I'm really liking this world so far, and I can't wait to get into it with you, Annie.
Me too. Oh, yeah, we didn't actually see Elizabeth and Darcy talk mm-hmm. to each other directly, more just some overheard stuff, so we'll see what happens if they actually face off.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you guys as well.
Yeah, so feel free to send us a note. We'd love to hear from everyone. We know that more people have read Pride and Prejudice, so we're hoping that, you know, people come and share their takes. And you can find us at thedailynightly.com. You can find us at Goodreads at Nightly Pod, on Instagram at thedailynightly, and you can email us at thedailynightly@gmail.com. And remember, Nightly is spelled KNIGHTLEY.
We've gotten some lovely emails from some readers in the past, so we'd love to hear from more of you guys.
Yeah.
Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the super awesome music that we use at the top and bottom of every episode. And until next time, Jesse.
Happy reading, everybody.
Happy reading. Bye.
Yay.